So, David, thank you so much for calling in. You're performing tomorrow night at the Magic Room.
Right.
And yeah. Do you know Dez for a long time, or is this...
No. Just sort of, he sent me something on Facebook or something, and that's about, you know, so he said, "Do you want to do it?" And I said, "Sure." And other people on, you know, I hate to be Facebooky, but other people on Facebook say, "Oh, you ought to play this place."
It's a great little room. It really is. Dez has done a nice job of it.
Says.
And
yeah.
I recently saw Gary Lucas from the Magic Band, right. Captain Beefheart's Magic Band. It was a great night. It was a really interesting story. So, will you be doing spoken word, or you'll have a band with you?
I've got my solo set up, which is I bring my melodeon, which is a... other people call it an accordion. It's a diatonic accordion. And some synthesizers, electronics, and so I do a solo show. All of my shows have stories, and you know, I talk far too much from all of my bands, but
some might say the same about me, David.
But
you know, well, you're an eloquent guy and somewhat of a genius.
That's what
right?
they say.
Well,
yeah.
That does you no good, does it?
That and $2 gets you a cup of coffee.
Well, the thing that's interesting about you is you're one of those faithful types that, you know, has influenced so many people, yet where's your payoff, right? Outside of accolades,
my
right?
My payoff is I get to do what I've wanted all my life. So, you know, everybody says blah, blah, blah about the oppressive system of the recording industry or the arts industry. And, you know, I always say... You can always do exactly what you want if you're willing to pay the price, which is that you confuse people and nobody knows where to put you, and you know, and you alienate your audience from time to time. You know, if you're going to stick around for 40 years or however long it's been now, and if you're going to 35, I don't know what the hell, and you know, if you're going to keep moving, you know, which is I thought was an idea, then you have to purge your audiences from time to time, and they always say, "Oh, we liked you when you were screaming, doing, you know, screaming rock." I said, "Well, I'm not doing that the rest of my life."
Yeah, and you know, people talk all the time about how you know, people have notoriously upset their audience, like, let's say, Bob Dylan going electric. But here in, you know, we have the American Masters series they did about Neil Young, who's a person who's changed himself up many, many times, pissing off many, many people. And no one realizes how much he has sacrificed, but he has a dedicated following. I think what you're describing to me, David, is a true artist's life. So you're not really...
Well. I have a lot of respect for Neil. I've always had a lot of respect because, you know, you just think, you know, he goes through those phases. You think, well, wow, this guy really, really just doesn't care. I mean, you know what I mean by not care, you know.
He just does what he wants. Exactly, and the audience hopefully will follow because who wants to be a one-trick pony for the rest of your life? I recently saw Chubby Checker at, like, a state fair here, and he's still, you know, he had a good time and had a great band behind him, but do you think he likes playing the twist since 1956 or whenever?
I don't know.
But, you
know, most people, 99% of the people out there do the same thing for decade after decade, if we're really honest. I mean, you know.
No, totally.
You know, well, it's all right. I don't have any, you know, I'm incapable. I mean, the safeguard with me is that I'm incapable of it. From the beginning, I thought, you know, I can do what I want, you know, or I can try to be a pop star for 5 years and get out. You know, those are the only choices you got. And I thought, well, you know, it's a powerful thing getting to do what you want, you know.
It is.
People say it's arrogant and selfish, but what the hell? You know, self-indulgent.
Who isn't, David?
Yeah, exactly.
And speaking of old stuff and going back and such, I'm holding in my hands the Rocket from the Tombs 7-inch. You've released a new 7-inch with two songs, I Sell Soul and Romeo and Juliet. What brought that about? Just
Rocket has been a long-term project. You probably know the stories that it's a totally volatile band. It always has been. Actually, I've just, as of last Saturday, finished the mix on the new Rocket album, which I'm very happy with, and so that'll be coming out next year sometime.
Will there be a tour to support that, or?
Oh, there's always some damn tour, you know. you know, you know, and the people say, well, what's next? Well, another album, another tour. You come home and sit in a corner and whimper for a few months, and then there's another album and another tour, and you come home and sit in the corner and whimper. I mean, you repeat that endlessly. That's, you know, that's what's new.
Well, what was it like with you guys getting together? Was it just as volatile as before?
Oh, yes.
Really? So age hasn't mellowed anybody, or?
No. Well, actually, I mean, it has nothing to do with mellowing. It just has to do with, you know, essentially, you know, we're not meant to be in the same band, you know. It's a very weird group of people that, you know, somehow Richard Lloyd, you know, who's been in the band for a number of years now, managed to fit right in, you know, being, you know, it's just, you know, we all like each other. We all get along. We all kind of personally get along with each other, but we're just from different worlds, and that's what makes the tension that makes the band really good, you know. So, you know, we have bust ups and fights, and, you know, but because we like each other, you know, you come home and you say, I'm never doing that again. And then in 2 months you go, you know. So, yeah, we've
They're not so bad.
Well, we like each other. That's what.
There's a lot of creative respect, I would imagine, and that's probably why there's a lot of arguing over what direction the song should go, and everybody sort of...
No, it's just everybody's got a short fuse, and we all come from different worlds, you know, and I don't know. I mean, Richard saw us... one of television's first shows ever outside of New York was something that we had put together in Cleveland in 1975, and they came in, and we were doing our sound check, and they evidently, according to Richard, we just totally scared those guys. Ryan was like a nervous wreck, you know, and they kind of wandered around thinking, these guys are insane, you know. But Richard said from that moment he always had wanted to play with us, you know. He wanted to be in the band, you know. And so decades passed, and Cheetah and him are friends, and so, you know, we decided to put something together for this. UCLA was doing a 3-day festival of my music. And
fantastic. That was when?
And, oh, gee, a decade ago, okay. I think at this point. I don't know, 2000 somewhere, I don't know. And so we thought, well, I was running out of things to do for 3 days, and I thought, let's do the entire trip. And that's how the band came back together again.
You know, the thing that I realized is I'm kind of floating under the radar because, you know, I like the more independent rock and or whatever you call it, experimental rock. And I didn't even know that Guns N' Roses covered Ain't It Fun.
Yeah, yeah.
What did you think of that? Did you just like cashing the check?
I don't get the check. It's Peter who wrote that song. I think Peter and Cheetah. I can't remember off the top of my head. No, I'm much more grateful to the Beastie Boys who used Sonic Reducer in as a sample in something, and I'm very grateful to them for my royalty from that.
Well, you know, a little bit of background. I mean, I talked about this with you. I don't know if you remember years ago you were here. We talked when Ray Gunn's Suitcase had come out, and you were working with Tim Kerr Records.
Yeah.
The way I found out about Perubu was years ago, there was that movie called Erg, A Music War, and you guys did the song Birdies, and then about 10 days after I saw that, you performed at the Paradise here in Boston with Wall of Voodoo, one of the greatest bar shows I've ever seen in my life, for sure.
Yeah.
And
Was it Wall of Voodoo, or was it... Is it Wall of Voodoo for that?
Yeah, it was, yeah. And there was another band that opened, it was a local band that opened for me.
The Girls.
Three bands. Was it The Girls?
I think so, yeah.
As in Jeffrey, I Hear You.
Yeah.
Wow, how did I forget that? Yeah, that was an amazing show. And the thing that I remember is, what I want to talk about is, there's some controversy about the Erg Music War. Has anyone contacted you about that? I heard that like all the original contracts were lost and they'd like to put that out on DVD and re-release it. But the problem is that finding all the people and talking to all the people and finding the original contracts for the rights, it's such a mess that it may never actually come out. So nobody has actually contacted you about that, or?
No, I heard a different story, but we've got our original, we've got our contract. You know, we still have that somewhere. No, I heard a different story, but I don't want to because it's third hand, I don't want to say what it is.
I think it's a phenomenal movie. If anybody has the chance to see it on a Blu-ray,
I've always been surprised that they haven't put that out. You know, I guess
What other rumors have you heard about it? I mean,
I don't know because it involves one of the other people and they don't want it to come out or something. I don't know. See, it's third hand stuff. I don't want to say who.
Sure. No problem.
Can't remember off the top of my head anyway.
Now, is Perubu still together, or is there more material coming out soon? Has anything
released
recently?
We've been doing the theatrical piece in Europe from Long Live Perubu, or Bring Me the Head of Ubuwa, whichever one it is.
And that came out last year? Or?
Yeah. So we've been doing that in Europe a bit. I don't know. We did it once. We did the cut-down version at Poisson Rouge in New York earlier this year, and I think we're going to repeat it. And then that was our attempt to fix theater. And the next album, which we're just going to start in on that, which is our next project is a fixed dance. So we're running through the number of art projects, art fields that we can fix. Somewhere we'll fix other things. But maybe someday we'll fix rock music. I don't know.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
Do you feel rock and roll might need a little chemotherapy or a little transfusion or something? Or
no, it doesn't need anything other than for people to stop being cowards and just produce the music that they should be producing. But
and I think at this point now it's much easier with the internet self-production and computer production and things like that. I mean, people really can go directly to the public and skip the label, and that's something Perubu kind of did on their own as well, sort of in the beginning.
Like I said, we always like to do what we want to do, and so we pay the price, which just means that everything is on small labels on ourselves, and we do everything ourselves.
And now that we've mentioned the Rocket from the Tombs cover, how about the Peter Murphy cover of Final Solution? How do you feel about that?
He made the mistake of pronouncing all the words. That's the only thing
But that's true. That's his theatrical sort of singing style, isn't it?
I liked it. It was okay. But
I think
you
did a good job, too, yeah.
Yeah, I just keep saying to myself, he's pronouncing the words so you can understand them. Why is he doing that?
Tomorrow night, what time do you think that you'll be going on?
I'm told that I'm absolutely going on at 9:30.
Okay, excellent. And I was told that we might have some tickets to give away for that. Is that true? Maybe we'll give those away.
Supposedly, I don't know. I don't pay attention. They asked me if they could give away some, and I said, yeah, what do I care?
Cool. I'll give away some after we speak. Now, are you still living in England? Last we spoke, you were living in England.
Yeah, I live in Brighton, down on the sea, on the seafront. Nick Cave lives next door. The manager of Iron Maiden lives down the street, Roger Waters has just moved. Oh, is it Dave Gilmour? One of those guys, Roger Waters or Dave Gilmour, has just moved in down the street.
So there's a band for you, David Thomas, Roger Waters, and Nick Cave. That'd be an interesting band.
Oh, there's tons of them, too. There's what's his name from Thin Lizzy, lives across from the street from my pub.
Oh, one of my all-time favorite bands from my childhood.
Gary Moore, that's his name.
Right. Wow, phenomenal. So you're living in a sort of Brighton Beach rock enclave there.
Yeah, Paul McCartney lives down the street.
Wow, you're doing quite well, David.
I got in before the prices went up. Believe me.
Good for you.
In fact, Nick Cave. My ex-wife has a bitter experience because he moved into the place that she wanted to move into. But there you go. So every time she sees him, she goes, he's in my apartment. He's in my flat.
So we were speaking briefly about the music industry. What's turning you on out there right now? Are there any musicians that you'd like to work with, or at least people that stand out to you of recent? I know it's hard to say.
There's a great club in London called Cafe Odo, which is kind of becoming world renowned because it's a commercial club and they only do improvised or experimental music and really good stuff. Not the tweedly, nonsense. And I love playing down there with just people we pick up, you know, like John Edwards and Chris Cutler, and I like everything down there. I'm not really a terrible experimental kind of guy, you know, fan, but they do some, there's some great stuff down there. I don't remember names, you know, I just, you know, like going down there and seeing whoever's on. I don't pay any attention to the commercial world, I'm afraid, just because...
It's not your world, really, is it? Or...
Well, I got nothing against commercial music. It's just that I when I'm done, I work on music all day long. When I'm done, I kind of don't want to hear anything. I'm afraid.
No, I'm an artist, and my walls are empty, and people always come to my apartment and say, well, how come you don't have stuff on the wall? It's like, by the end of the day, I don't want to look at anything. I like blankness. No. It's really nice. And
walls.
Yeah, but music is nonstop, though. So throughout, we talked a little bit about how influential Pere Ubu and your personal music has been. What is maybe like the biggest moment when somebody came up to you and was thankful to you?
I have two big moments that when I'm in the Musicians Union retirement home, you know, sitting next to Brian Ferry, who was telling me about how many hundreds of thousands of people came to see him in Brazil. You know, that I have two moments. One is that Linda Thompson once came up to me and said, you know, I wish I could sing like you. And two, Van Dyke Parks once came up to me during this Harry Smith Project thing when I was doing some impromptu arrangement with a bunch of people, including Percy Heath and a bunch of people. And Van Dyke Parks came up to me and said, you're a good arranger. You know, so those are the two things that I'll hit Brian Ferry with, and he won't remember who any of these people are. You know, tell me how much of the GDP of Brazil he took away in T-shirt sales.
Roxy Music is a band that's starting to actually get a lot more acclaim back now. I think the next generation is rediscovering the old stuff, not the Avalon days of Roxy Music. Do you think that there'll be some people should anticipate a tour from Pere Ubu maybe in the next years?
When we finish up the next album, I'm sure we'll go through one of these pointless tours, you know.
Does it irk you when people call you Pere Ubu?
No, I don't care.
Now, I was doing some erroneous research on the internet, and I came across this interesting quote that the only place that you've ever really been satisfied with the live setup of your music and production of your music is in Denmark, and you have a fondness in your heart for Denmark because they aided the Jews during World War II. Is that erroneous or is that true?
No, I said something. I'm not sure that I ever... I love Denmark and I love working with Danish musicians and I have a Danish band, and someday we finished an album with this Dane, and hopefully it'll come out one of these years. The King of Denmark and all that and the Jews in World War II, he said... And the Nazis came to him, and he said, give us your Jews. And he said, from this day forward, I too am a Jew, you know. And
few did that back in that day.
Precious few did that.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Well, just a side note, myself and my girlfriend both are children of survivors, so I really was touched to read that. I'm looking here, and it says that Jim Jones actually played tracks on the MC5 some of their first recordings. Is that true?
No, not that I'm aware of. I'm sure I would have found out.
I only say that because I call my show Kick Out the James.
Oh, excellent.
And also, last time you were here, it was about to release the Data Panic in the Year Zero box set. How well has that sold for you?
It seems to keep selling. I don't know. They certainly keep selling on the English company. I don't know. I mean, on the American company, it's Universal or Geffen or whatever they are these days. And I'm not sure that they, know anything about it, you know. But certainly in the rest of the world, it keeps moving along.
And now, do you ever get back to Cleveland?
Oh, I'm in Cleveland now.
Oh, there you go.
I come back. I come back 3 or 4 times a year.
For family or for recording?
Oh, to work. I work here. I record here and for family and just to come back. And whenever I am about to do a record, oftentimes I'll take road trips. And you know, and so and just get out on the road for a couple of weeks. And
so I imagine you'll be flying in for tomorrow night's show.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So not driving all the way from Cleveland
on the tour bus. I was thinking of driving. The airplanes are so much trouble these days.
No, it's true.
I mean, I think it's maybe 8 to 10 hours driving to Boston. And by the time you finish messing with one of those flights, you know, it's not necessarily for Boston, but you know, four of that 8 hours are going to be taken up with flying. You know, it's an hour flight, but 2 hours ahead of time.
Right.
You know, and by the time you're done with it, I'd rather drive.
Yeah, and you get to see part of the country. Now, are you producing other people, or is this your own material that you're talking about that you're working on in Cleveland, or do you travel around to produce other people's things?
I produced an album by a band called 156075 last year, I think it was, which is the greatest band I've ever seen in my life.
And really?
Most people that I tell, I bring down there to say, this is the greatest band you're ever going to see. And they don't believe you because, you know, everybody says that sort of stuff. And
sure.
Within about a song and a half, they turn to me and say, this is the greatest band I've ever seen.
This is 1560?
1560-75.
60-75.
They've been around since 1970. They play in Kent, Ohio. Best place to see them is the Speakeasy in Youngstown. They're the band that sort of the granddaddy of all the Cleveland bands. You know, Devo used to, you know, that's where everybody, you know, found out about Devo, because we'd go down there and see 156075, and there's these other guys, and we'd, you know, you'd get to say, oh, who are you, and blah, blah, blah. Everybody used to, I mean, it's impossible to, the easiest, only way to describe them really is that they are to the blues what Paraboo is to rock.
Phenomenal. Wow, I'm going to definitely check them out.
If you say, email me your information, I'll send you an album.
That'd be great. Thank you so much. Another thing, I kind of lost my train of thought there, but are there ever like Cleveland, like, you know, rock and roll reunions at a bar where you could walk in and see, you know, yourself and Devo and people?
Everybody's too far, too dysfunctional. All those bands from that period, the legendary period, are far too dysfunctional, you know, to you know, we were the Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young of the scene, man. Sort of all the functional people, man, you know, that were around kind of ended up in Paraboo, the rest of the band. You know, disrespect, because they're great bands, but, you know, the people were... People in them were odd. If you think Peru,
well, I think it's very difficult to get highly creative people together and keep it sane, or at least there's a lot of egos. There's
we
a lot
run
of
into each other. We run into each other. There's little bits of things. You know, Scott Krause has a band that he gets together, and sort of the old timers, you know, show up and that sort of stuff. But it's
he was also a member of the Paraboo spinoff band Tripod Jimmy. Is that correct?
Who was Tom?
Scott?
Was
not Tom.
No,
okay,
so no, Tom, it was Tom.
Tom. Okay.
Tom is retired. We got him back. We did a concert of the modern dance. You know, like the way these people do these things.
Right. The tours where they do one album. I recently saw the Buzzcocks and did their first two albums in their entirety.
Well, we did that as a one-off, as a sort of a benefit for a Cleveland club. Or no, not a benefit, it's their birthday, their anniversary, 10-year anniversary. Old friends of ours have a club in Cleveland. And so we put it together for that, and Tom came out of retirement to do that. But
I'm looking forward in November to seeing the reform of Guided by Voices, who are getting back together. They're another Ohio band.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're getting back together. I know that Robert Pollard, I think he's got some sort of watermark or benchmark that he's put on himself, that he's going to put out 6 albums a year.
6 albums a year.
Yeah, I think he's done it, but we're not getting the servicing here at ZBC. I don't know, either because of the money involved or whatever. It's very, very difficult, so we don't get a lot of stuff. So I try to find as much as I can on my own, but I can't be.
Yeah.
They're highly prolific. Did you ever hear from any of them? Were they influenced by the old Cleveland?
They were kind of after I left town. I left town basically in the early 80s. And they sort of were after, you know, I never had any, you know, close contact with them. It's just, I know their work.
But. Sure. How do you feel when you go back to Cleveland? Now, I recently was in Buffalo, New York, and I found out that it's one of the six poorest cities in the country. I know that Cleveland has gone the recession. How does that feel to see that?
Well, Cleveland's been this way for decades. It's I kind of just know the airport, and I know
and some recording studios and a local bar.
Recording studios way out, and I don't. I have very few of the old people. You know, I don't know anybody here anymore. It's not really. It's not. It's a ghost town, and it's always been a ghost town, and they've just torn down all of the places that I know, and so it really is.
Yeah, and CBGB's is gone in New York now. I don't know if you've seen what CBGB's is now. It's
I frequent a place in New York called the Bowery Poetry Club, run by Bob Holman, which is a great place. And that's across the street from where CBG. That neighborhood is just shot through the roof. Whatever they call it, yuppification.
My uncle has lived in a rent-controlled place or rent-stabilized place at West, I always get confused, West 3rd or West 4th in Sullivan, and I walk through there, and it's like, wow, because I used to go visit him when I was in high school in the mid-70s, and it was kind of, and like St. Mark's kind of a hole, but now the whole mollification of New York City is
this stuff happens. Nothing stays the same. Everything becomes a ghost town.
Yeah, you know? Only that's constant is change.
That's what's called getting old. You know, I think it's pretty universal.
Well, you're doing it fairly gracefully, I think. I mean, you're sticking to your guns and doing your thing and staying creative.
Because I don't look back. I don't get nostalgic. I don't look back. I don't do kids these days. I don't do any of that stuff. I just keep doing what I do and screw the rest of the world sort of thing.
And speaking of the rest of the world, now how is it for you now that you're an expatriate in England? What is it like looking back on America from the other side of the ocean?
It's a whole lot better than England. England is, my life in England consists of the airport, my local pub, and the shop down the street, and that's about it. I live on the beach, and I have a little studio in my house, my flat, and that's about it. That's my only. I try not to ever go to the doctor because they'll kill you over there. You know, there was a great report. You know, there's a great news story last year about how only 500 people died in the local hospital from whatever that hospital disease is. The one they get in hospitals?
The super virus kind of thing.
Yeah. You're talking about. Yeah. And this was supposed to be a positive story, that only 500 people in the local hospital died last year from just going in for a broken bone or something and coming out dead.
Right, from an infection, exactly. I always say, if you want to get sick, go to the hospital. And it seems like everybody I know that goes in for a surgery winds up with pneumonia.
Yeah, don't go to a hospital in England. You know, whatever you think of American hospitals, you know, don't go in one in England.
So are you advocating that we do not adopt the healthcare reform?
Or? I am not an advocate of anything, because musicians shouldn't. I hate musicians who intrude in politics, you know, because they're usually stupid. And, you know, every time I listen to Sting going on about something or other, you know. Or
you just
Bruce
want to punch him. Yeah, yeah. No.
You want to, Bruce Springsteen, that whole Tom Joad thing, I went to see that. Jeez, I was just like, please, you know, stop preaching at me. You know,
you got to give him ups for covering Suicide's, what was the Suicide song he covered, Dream Baby Dream?
I didn't know he did that.
He did, yeah. I can't stand it.
Ever since Tom Joad, I can't stand anything, you know. But
it was a bit of a pose-a-thon.
My point is, if he had been growing up in Nazi Germany, he would have been, you know, in all probability, just a Nazi supporter. Musicians are scum. Musicians are cowards. I include myself in this category. You know, I'm scum. I'm a coward. I'm the lowest of the low.
But aren't we all cowards? I mean, we all live in such fear and stuff. And there's all this crap that comes out, these self-help books about how we have to limit fear and get rid of fear.
I think Yeah, I know.
Here's another point I'd like to bring up. I'm back in college myself right now, and I was sitting in my class, and
you're not an eternal student, are you?
Oh no, I haven't been to. I never actually got my bachelor's degree, so I'm going back and getting it. I'm almost 50 years old, so I haven't been to college since 1982. Right. But we were talking about just oppression and barbarism, and the violence of the world, and it's like I felt like saying, and I didn't want to do it because I tend to rant, and I wanted to say, we're just a barbarous race of cowards, of fearful cowards who want to kill anyone that comes near us and filled with a lot of hate and things like that. And I think, they talk about how from the 20th century was the most violent century but in some ways, right. We don't have the Colosseum. Our weekly entertainment isn't watching people being fed to the lions. We don't have.
I'm not sure about it. Every time I watch America, I come over here and see watch American TV. I'm
totally
physically shocked. It's American TV consists of gruesome dead bodies being picked apart and hideous and endless vampire shows, endless dead bodies shows, and I find it astonishing and gruesome. I'm not sure about the Colosseum bit.
Right,
but
also the voyeurism of reality TV is very scary.
This is what comes with punk. That's all that X Factor stuff, whatever they call it, American Idol. That's all punk. That's all that same idea that anybody can do can be a rock musician, and that's what punk showed. Baloney. Number one, when has it not been that anybody could be a rock musician? Chubby Checker,
exactly.
Or dishwasher. But number two, that's this mania about, everybody can do this. No, they can't. No. Only self-expression should be left to the musician, should be left to the professionals. Normal people, civilians, can't handle the pressure. They can't handle the disappointment. The thing that musicians effectively lack, I include myself, effectively lack imagination. They can't foresee a better life for themselves. So they can go out on stage in front of 10,000 people and utterly humiliate themselves one day and go back the next day and do the same damn thing all over again.
All while kind of feeding their ego at the same time, do you think?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's a very intoxicating profession.
Well, that's what I was about to say. There must be something that lures you in. It's a hideous bitch goddess, I guess, or
no, it depends on who you are. I do it because two or three times a year I achieve some crystal moment of clarity, and I can stop time on stage, and it's a personal, thing, and you think to yourself, geez, I've approached perfection for 9.7 nanoseconds. And
no, it's true. I mean, people, you see somebody like I like to do photography or drawing. I was an artist as my own career, and people say, oh wow, this piece is so great, and I'm like, yeah, well, it took 100 to get to that one. Okay, so it's like, people think that you're always brilliant and you have to be on. And I was talking to some people about art, and because I had overheard some people at the Met, I was walking through there when I was in New York recently, and they're like, oh my goodness, they were talking like these people like Picasso just painted that just fell out of his head. They don't realize that this thing is slaved over and changed, and maybe when it was done, Picasso said, what a piece of crap that thing is.
Yeah, sure. I'm sure he did. Well, you have to be able to deal with failure. I mean, people say, why, civilians never understand when you say, as soon as I get it right, I quit. I'm out of this business. The only thing that keeps me going is decades of failure, and every time you do an album, you think, oh, God, no, I just didn't turn out the way I wanted it, I'm convinced that if I ever do a perfect album or album I'm happy with, I'll quit. I can do other stuff.
David, all I can say from what you're saying right there is you are a true artist, because I've always heard, whether that's a lackluster phrase or a sort of anemic phrase, but I've always heard what makes a good artist a great artist is that everything they do, they can't stand it in 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
So as long as you keep going, because I'm always that way. I'm like, wow, look at this. I love it. And I'm like proud, and I'm walking around. I go out for a couple of beers. I'm like, woohoo, I created this great thing. And then I come home and I'm like, wow, that's not all that great, is it? Makes you want to, keeps you striving, I guess.
Well, yeah, you want to get it right. You get it right, you can stop.
Well, let's hope that...
Why keep going after you've gotten it right?
What was that again?
Why keep going after you've gotten it right?
No, of course, or else you've wind up playing...
screwing it up.
Yeah, or else you spend the rest of your life playing Star Rockets in Flight, Afternoon Delight, yeah, right, or something like that. Now, tomorrow, again, we'll mention it because we should probably wrap it up. You probably got to get going. Tomorrow night, you'll be at the Magic Room, probably going on around 9:30. The Magic Room is on North Beacon Street in the Alston-Brighton section of Boston. It's part of the new Sound Museum Studios that Dez has over in, as I said, the Alston-Brighton area. It's very, if you're driving there, you want to be on Market Street near the new WGBH headquarters. Take a left on North Beacon Street. It's only a few blocks down, or if you're coming from Brighton Ave and North Beacon Street, you just about 6 or 7 blocks down there. 9:30. Is there anybody opening for you? It's just going to be...
No, I don't think so. Not that I'm aware of.
Now, will you be doing any kind of question answering with the people? I just know because it's such an intimate room that there's usually... there's interaction with the audience because they're kind of right there. Cool.
Well, I hope they don't ask anything while I'm playing. I don't like interruption. I'm sure I'll hang around. I just did this show in Copenhagen. It was really a wonderful thing. It was a private show. Somebody asked, they had Marky Smith last year. He does about 2 a year. He has a little outbuilding in his house. He's made a little stage of 35 people. He can, it must be extremely expensive to go to, and it's by invitation sort of only or contact only. And it's, it goes to 6 in the morning, and so I was hanging around far too late,
Have you ever collaborated with Marky Smith?
Oh, no, I'm not sure Marky Smith is a collaborator.
I was going to say, I was asking why it's kind of a stupid question because Woody, but have you happened to hear the new Fall album that came out this year?
No, I haven't. How is it?
Very good. Back to their old glory. Yeah. I mean, I'm just glad because they kind of floundered around and, he's kind of rested, kind of going back to his roots. It's really, really well done, well produced.
I'll have to check it out.
But, thank you so much, David. This was phenomenal. Anything else you want to tell the people? Anything
on
your
mind? I don't volunteer information. I answer questions.
Excellent. Very, very wise. So, again, tomorrow night at the Magic Room, going on around 9:30, David Thomas of Para Ubu will be performing. And thank you so much for taking the time out and talking with me.
Thank you. Send me some the information, and I'll send you that album.
I definitely will. I'll be there tomorrow night, and I'll say hi when I come in. Okay?
All right.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And that was David Thomas of Para Ubu. As I said, he was so gracious to have an interview with us, and he'll be again performing tomorrow at the Magic Room. And you know what? Give us a call, 617-552-4686. And if you want tickets to that, if we do have tickets, they'll know out front, and make a donation for those tickets, please. This is our last kick out the James where we'll be donating. You have the chance to donate some money. So please give us a call, 617-552-4686. You can donate online at wzbc.org. Hey, what'd you think of that?
I like the interview. I think he said a lot of great things.
He did. I think he's a genius.
Yeah, and he's so honest and just like genuine. Yeah.
No, it's true. Yeah. He probably has no friends for that reason. I'm kind of the same way. No, it's very refreshing because everybody is so fearful these days of saying the wrong thing and being politically correct, and he just says and does what he wants.
Yeah.
And from what it sounds like, he gets to travel the world. It's a great life for him. So why don't we play a little Para Ubu? We've skipped the cons report, so F the cons report, folks. We're just going to play some Para Ubu. Let's just play some Para Ubu because now I'm psyched to hear Para Ubu. This is the Non-Alignment Pact, and we're hearing it off of the Data Panic in the Year Zero. I forget which album this comes off of. I'm sorry, Modern Dance. Was it Modern Dance? I'm getting old. I forget these things. But this is Para Ubu in the song Non-Alignment Pact. We're just going to do Para Ubu till the end of the show. Thanks for joining us. Please donate. 617-552-4686, WZBC.org.
Now
WZBC, that's Perubu, and I'm only talking right now because the stuff I want to play is all on the same CD. So now we're going back. This is Final Solution that we talked about on the interview. What a gracious guy. You know, I'm going to say, I hope he's not listening. He was a dick the last time I interviewed him, but this time, brilliant. The genius that I expected. Final Solution here on ZBC. You know, they said that about the Jews, but he's changing it around. Perubu, ZBC.
Little bit of thorns, never been an insurrection.
WZBC, we're doing a little Pararubu special, thanks to David Thomas, who was nice enough to grant us an interview, and he was very, very good, and thanks to all the people complimenting on that. Please donate, 617-552-4686, WZBC.org. Either of those will get you a chance to donate. This is the last 10 minutes of the Kick Out the James program, where we wind up asking you for money. We're going until Sunday on the Begathon, Pledge-a-thon, fundraiser, as I call it, not the fundraiser, right, Emma? Mm-hmm. And now we're going to hear another track from the band Pararubu. This is the song called Modern Dance. And I know it's from the Modern Dance album. Come on, folks, give a call. Give till it hurts. You know, give me $5. Come on, skip a coffee, $5. Don't buy some pot. Down at the bar, man.